and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, October 6, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. Ahead of World Mental Health Day on October 10th, we wanted to know, what does true mental health support look like in a workplace? While we might often think of support in terms of resources and services, might true workplace wellness go deeper than that? This week on Rabble Radio, Rabble labor reporter Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga sat down with Elizabeth Holding to talk about wellness in our workplaces. Holding is an Ottawa-based pediatric physiotherapist and organizer with Justice for Workers and the Decent Work and Health Network. Here are Kaluge-Kasuga and Holding in conversation. Take a listen.
So thank you so much for joining us on Rabble Radio today, Lizzie.
Thanks so much. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I guess to start off, you know, we're really interested ahead of, you know, Mental Health Day. What is kind of the situation? You work in the health sector. What is kind of the mental health situation, you know, from your experience as a worker?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that in healthcare, similar to lots of places, but especially in the area I work in pediatrics at CHEO, there's been immense pressure on workers, and it has caused a bit of a crisis of burnout, of too much pressure on workers. And I think that's really like exacerbated a lot of like mental health, like pressure on people's mental health. So in at CHEO, I know that like we've had a period of infection last year that was kind of unprecedented. it put enormous pressure on our healthcare system. And so I think a lot of people are really anxious going into this next peak season about what that's going to look like and whether the same is going to, you know, pressure is going to be expected of the health workers there.
Yeah. And so how does that kind of, you know, those fears of that pressure coming back up, how does that manifest in, you know, work environment and for the health sector, patient care as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the healthcare sector, this is like care work. And so a lot of the times how you relate to your patients and how you are able to provide your service really does feed into your well-being and your mental health. Because you are in this empathic role where your work, you kind of are seeing directly how it impacts people. It really puts an extra layer of immediate pressure on you, and it can definitely impact your day-to-day mental health and your long-term mental health. For example, I work in pediatric care and I work in school-based care, and in my job I'm kind of working with kids at schools. And so if I'm seeing that, you know, I'm overloaded and I'm not able to see these kids in time, that has a huge impact on my mental health as a health worker, because it's really hard to see these kids not getting the services they deserve in a timeline that would be, you know, the ideal for them, that would provide them with the most joy and the most fulfillment in their school. So you see this a lot in care work, that there are high rates of burnout because you see the effects of things like underfunding really directly in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that sounds like definitely a difficult thing to be facing, to see those effects. I'm going to kind of bring the conversation a bit more broad now, because you're also an organizer with Justice for Workers. So I'm wondering, through your organizing work, like, what have you seen in terms of mental health trends more broadly for workers in general?
So I think more broadly, at least in Ontario and across Canada, we see that workers are under enormous pressure from this affordability crisis. The cost of living has increased dramatically. Our housing is extremely expensive or not accessible. Our groceries are extremely expensive. All of our basic goods are just kind of going through the roof. And so what this does is it puts immense pressure on workers to you know, make sure that they're trying to kind of hold on to their job and get through the day, to make sure that they don't end up food insecure, they don't end up not being having enough to eat and not having a place to live. And we know that you know, access to basic necessities is a huge predictor of mental health. So I definitely see, like, broadly in workers right now, they're facing like a enormous pressure from this kind of greedflation, essentially.
And so what are kind of like the effects, you know, of living for many workers living under this constant immense pressure? Like, what does it mean for, you know, our province, for our country, kind of?
I mean, I think that a lot of times it definitely has a negative impact on their mental health. They are going to often feel like there isn't a lot of hope. As well, it just, as a health worker, I can say that it has like negative health outcomes for them. People who are like under this stress all the time to be performing at work and to ensure that they're putting food on the table, that kind of stress it has a lot of adverse outcomes later on in terms of being at higher risk for like cardiovascular conditions and like mental health as well. It's very linked to, you know, your whole sense of well-being, and that's linked to your health in general.
It's a really pervasive kind of issue. So I'm curious, like, in your organizing, has there been any effort to work to kind of, you know, address that and, you know, help strengthen workers?
Mm-hmm. So I think when we have the conversation about mental health, a lot of the thing that we like directly go to is like, do we have access to mental health services? And of course, that's so, so important. Having access to mental health workers, like crisis workers, social workers, or people who can help you to maybe like mentally process and psychologically process and understand and learn about your mental health. Those are important for workers and for people when they're trying to address like their own mental health and hopefully like be able to, you know, be well and or survive, you know, with their mental health. But I think that another really important part of it is talking about how shaping our workplaces in general can down the line have impacts on our mental health. So for me, when I think about like how do we have wellness in our workplaces, it isn't just like, you know, check, I have therapy on my benefits, even though that's important. It's also, do I have a strong union that's going to protect me from working unpaid overtime? That's going to protect me from being forced to work overtime at all? Do I have a safe workplace where I'm not being forced to do things that are dangerous, or I'm not instructing other people to do things that are dangerous? Because those protections, those are going to have an impact on my overall well-being. You know, it's not just like, how do we treat the problem? Like, my mental health is being impacted because I'm not in a safe workplace. That's kind of treating the problem down the line, as opposed to like, how do we shape these workplaces to be places of wellness? So yeah, I think in with Justice for Workers, one of the things we do is try to work with workers to understand how they can have that agency in their workplaces, either as a part of their union or with other workers, and demand workplace conditions that are going to give them a place of wellness and going to mean that they can be healthy at work.
Yeah, that's a really good point you bring up about, you know, the root cause of these mental health issues. I'm curious, you know, how are we doing, you know, how are employers doing in Canada in terms of creating these atmospheres that promote, you know, general wellness? Like, what are some of the barriers that are persisting?
Mm-hmm. One of the big things that I've been doing, I also work with the Decent Work and Health Network, which is an organization that works specifically with health workers to improve workplace conditions. And from a health worker perspective, and one of the things that we've been really struggling with and trying to wrestle out of these employers is paid sick days. So 10 permanent employer provided paid sick days. And, you know, this is so critical for mental health. We saw during the pandemic how awful it was when people had to choose between going to work sick, getting their coworkers sick. You know, it's not good for your mental health either to be working sick, because you're pushing yourself beyond where you should be. And then also the other choice is just that they have to stay home and not put food on the table, and their families are going hungry, or they're at risk of being homeless. And so that decision is completely ridiculous. We know that paid sick days are good for everyone. And so this fight is ongoing. We're continuing to mount the pressure to demand 10 paid sick days, but we know that employers are not just giving these up without a fight.
What do you think is motivating these employers to maybe not prioritize conditions that are conducive to general wellness in their workers?
Yeah, I mean, in this case, it's honestly hard to know. There's actually a lot of evidence that 10 paid sick days is good for everybody. It's not only good for workers and good for long-term health, but it is also economically better in the long term because you have lower rates of turnover, lower rates of training. You're not having to deal with an outbreak at work. You just have a couple people who are staying home sick. So it's really unclear in terms of 10 paid sick days, but we know that in terms of suppressed wages and forcing workers to break their collective bargaining agreement or actively union busting so that workers can't organize, those actions by employers are motivated by greed. And we know that these employers have been inflating the cost of basic groceries, just so that they can make a profit. And profits have been rising incredibly. There have been massive gains amongst the richest Canadians and at an awful cost to the rest of us.
Yeah, and that's the point of greed is actually an interesting point to bring up because, you know, we talk a lot, you've mentioned, you know, unions and, you know, workplace protections in that way can help, you know, improve general wellness. But do you think legislation would be a stronger kind of solution to these kind of issues, or where do you think the responsibility lies?
So I think legislative tools are incredibly important. I don't necessarily think the unions can't have a part in that. Unionized and non-unionized workers can like work together and demand more of our government. But I do think like to protect all workers, often, yeah, you do need like a legislative change that says that all workers all employers need to enforce certain conditions. We see that a lot like with the Status for All movement that's happening right now. It's just necessary that these workers have status, because without status, none of these workplace laws affect them or apply to them in the same way. And so when we have this kind of floor that's so much lower for these workers, it means that it lowers the kind of grounds of what's acceptable for all of us. Whereas if we raise the floor and we give these workers status, it's going to be hugely an improvement for everyone, because we have said, you know, these kinds of conditions where we're being paid, you know, less than minimum wage, so like, you know, some $6 an hour or even less, and we don't have access to healthcare and we don't have overtime, those are not acceptable. And so it changes the framework or the kind of consensus about what is normal, because that's not okay. It shouldn't be okay. And we need to make that clear with our laws.
Yeah, definitely. And it could, like, you know, it really helps create those environments that we've talked about that get to the root of the problem. I'm kind of going back to, like, you know, addressing the symptoms, you know, seeing if there's mental health coverage. I'm wondering, you know, is that something, do you think that should become part of kind of our public health care system? Or is it more kind of in the domain of like our collective bargaining?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that we're always going to be fighting on all fronts. So we're going to be strategically trying to make gains where we can. Of course, we deserve mental health coverage. It's ridiculous that, you know, our eyes, teeth, and mental health aren't covered in our so-called social healthcare system. But I think that it's about kind of finding where we can to fight. I think it would be great if it was just an automatic for everyone, especially because a lot of mental health coverage that as a part of our benefits plans are often really inadequate. For example, I know I have a friend whose insurance plan covers $25 of each therapy session. Well, therapy sessions are like, you know, $100 to $200 or more dollars per session. So it's almost like a farce. It says, oh, we have mental health coverage, but they actually don't. And so I think that sometimes when you have those kind of tricks. That's harder if it's just a blanket coverage. I do think it's important that we move towards broader changes where we just say, this is included, this is a part of our health.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I like what you said there, like we'll always kind of be fighting on all fronts. I'm curious, where is kind of the most active front in this struggle at the moment?
Yeah, that's a very tricky question. I think, I mean, it honestly would depend who you ask. People are involved in struggles in all different areas. Like with Justice for Workers right now, we've been really focusing on targeting the provincial government, because we know that they've actually given a lot of they've had a lot of concessions recently after really aggressive organizing. They had concessions where they backed down after the education workers went on strike. They backed down on the green belts, and so it gives us a really good sign that if we like are aggressive and we push this government for all it's worth, that we can make really important wins.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so definitely a lot of hope with recent wins for sure. What would you say, to people who are getting involved in organizing, who have maybe been, affected firsthand by these issues of like mental health injuries in the workplace? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that would definitely become an obstacle to organizing on top of already, being burnt out through work or whatever else people are doing. What is kind of your advice for that?
I mean, that's a really good, like, I think that's a really good question. And I think that it's an issue like in all types of organizing. You're often experiencing the effects of what you're organizing for and trying to struggle with that at the same time as trying to fight back. And with mental health in particular, it can be particularly different difficult because it's going to impact every area of your life. I do think that there is a degree of energy that you can get from that solidarity, that collective action, that can be like helpful for you in terms of your health, but it depends on the person. And some people I think are, they might be like needing to lean on mutual aid networks in the meantime and be relying on other people's organizing. So I do think if there's a balance in organizing, there's always times where you have to take a break and you have to have the solidarity to know that someone else is going to be taking up that action while I'm taking a break. And it's okay to take a break. And then there's other times where you're feeling, maybe you're feeling angry and this is a good place to channel it. So I think that you kind of have to balance those two things.
Yeah, definitely. That makes a lot of sense. And yeah, so is there anything else you wanted to kind of add or mention on this issue of kind of what's going on, like, with mental health, for many workers out there?
I think, I mean, in terms of I think again, in terms of the hospital, we are really facing a crossroads right now, unfortunately, where so many people have been asked to continuously work overtime without adequate compensation or have had their vacation canceled multiple times, and they're just not being given the space. And so because of and they're not being compensated because appropriately because of Bill 124. Now we know that again we got that to be repealed, but I think there is this huge push right now because of this orchestrated crisis to privatize healthcare. And so I think that this is a really pivotal moment for our healthcare system to decide, are we going to collectively fight for this healthcare system where we do have agency as workers, we have united power, or are we going to let it be handed over to these private corporations who will not be as responsive to outside pressure because public private unions are it's always more difficult. We know as well that it will have an impact on our patients. So I do think that's kind of the real question to health workers out there right now is how are you fighting against the privatization of healthcare, and can you live with this, the privatization of your sector? How is that going to impact you? Because I know for me, I can't afford private healthcare. I would be extremely worried to work within private healthcare, as someone who does not want the profit motive to be implicated in how I treat my patients. Yeah, I think that's the kind of the last thing I would put out in terms of what health workers are going to be thinking in the future.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, like you said, it's definitely a pivotal moment and an important time for health workers to reflect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Rabble Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That was Rabble labor reporter Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga and Elizabeth Holding in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Elizabeth and Gabby. To learn more about Justice for Workers and the Decent Work and Health Network, please visit the links in our show notes, or for all of you listening on radio, visit rabble.ca. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It, and for that, we'll hand it over to Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week saw Manitoba NDP leader Wab Kanoo make history when he led his party to a majority government in Tuesday's provincial election, and doing so became the first First Nations person to be premier of a Canadian province. Manitoba did something more progressive than any of those big cities ever did, Kanoo said on election night. Kanoo's NDP campaigned on promises to improve Manitoba's healthcare system, create more affordable housing, and provide better mental health and addiction support. The new premier acknowledged, however, that this election campaign was a divisive one. The ruling Progressive Conservatives under Heather Stephenson campaigned on a promise to never search the Brady Road landfill near Winnipeg for the bodies of missing Indigenous women who are suspected to be the victims of a serial killer. Unions like the Manitoba chapter of the Canadian Union of Public Employees condemned Stephenson as heartless and welcomed Kanoo's victory. Kanoo has promised to try and search the landfill. In labor news, Rabble labor reporter Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga reports that members of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, the OSSTF, have approved a bargaining plan that includes possible binding arbitration with the province. The plan, approved by members, will have the union engage in bargaining with the provincial government until October 27th. Any outstanding issues after that date will be sent to binding arbitration. Earlier this past summer, the Toronto Teachers Bargaining Unit of the union stated their opposition to the move. The bargaining unit feared that by agreeing to binding arbitration in advance, that they would be conceding important labor rights, like the right to strike, saying, quote, "It might have a serious impact on solidarity, on our capacity to organize our members, and on building collective actions going forward," end quote. Stephanie Ross, professor of labor studies at McMaster University, told Rabble that this move by the OSSTF could impact the negotiations that other teachers' unions are engaging in with the province. Indeed, when the approval of the bargaining plan was announced, Ontario Education Minister Stephen Lecce urged other unions to reach a deal as well. The Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario is currently negotiating with the province and is in the process of taking strike votes this month. In other labor news, labor unions want to see the Liberals fulfill their promise to introduce sweeping anti-scab legislation this fall. Scabs are temporary employees hired by employers to replace workers who are involved in a work action like a strike or a lockout. Canada's Labour Minister Seamus O'Regan has promised in the House of Commons to follow through with that promise for anti-scab legislation. But unions are continuing to pressure the government to ensure that any new legislation is strong and robust. The Canadian Union of Public Employees National Office took part in a demonstration with other unions on Parliament Hill on September 19th. At that rally, they called on the government to include remote workers in any anti-scab bill. O'Regan himself has said that he wants to introduce this legislation as the use of scabs interferes with a worker's ability to bargain with their employer and extends labor disputes. Sticking with labor, Rabble freelance reporter Anthony Marcusa reports on the use of energy exchanges by yoga studios. Energy exchanges are where people volunteer their time with a yoga studio to help them run their business in exchange for perks like classes. Many of these exchanges, however, have features that see those who participate treated more as regular employees than volunteers. Energy exchange participants often have to work shifts, work a certain number of hours a week, are expected to take on duties like opening and closing and cleaning the studio, and more, all in exchange for a limited number of classes. Even in cases where both parties agree that the position is voluntary, it may not meet those criteria under Ontario's Employment Standards Act. And finally, Off the Hill returns Wednesday, October 18th. This month, our Off the Hill panel, co-hosted by Robin Brown and Libby Davies, is tackling the affordable housing crisis in Canada. In particular, how such a large-scale housing crisis can exist in such a wealthy country, and discuss what needs to be done now to develop affordable, accessible housing for people. Guests this month include NDP MP Matthew Green, Alex Hemingway, senior economist for the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, ACORN spokesperson Tania Burkhart, and Rabble parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg. Visit our website to sign up and join us on Zoom on October 18th at 4:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. To read the full version of all the stories we talked about today, please visit rabble.ca.
Rabble.ca shares news for the rest of us. We believe news for the rest of us is about creating a more informed and connected world. Help Rabble.ca make quality, progressive news and views accessible to all. Become a Rabble Rouser today and support us during our summer fundraiser with a one-time or monthly donation.
And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.
Hey, folks.